Hey there, welcome to ATL and 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording on a late Thursday night after the 2023 NBA draft. Glenn, you've got the floor. Initial impressions?
Good work, I think. They didn't come away with anybody that's going to make a fan base think like, oh, here's a future superstar. I mean, I don't want to say what Kobe Bufkin can't become. I just think that when you're picking 15th and you kind of looking at what you're looking for there, you still have quite your expectations that high. Now he could go on to have a career with three or four all-star. Like, who knows what these young guys can develop into, but. I think Bufkin's a good fit. I think Gay, if that trade becomes official, it sounds like it will, is an interesting guy. We'll talk about him. He's a project. And then it's kind of funny when they drafted Lundy. I was imagining like Kyle being in the room and being angry they didn't get a shooter. So like, okay, let's appease Kyle and get a shooter. just kind of a humorous way of thinking about that. But overall, I think it's good work. I don't know if they got a player that's going to like be a starter on a really, really good team. Maybe Bufkin will be that one day or not. I don't know. But I thought they added where it made sense to add. I think also thought they brought in guys who kind of profile and have skills or projectable skills that make sense for kind of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, when you're drafting 15 and 46, and even if you knew you were going to draft at 39, you're by and large looking for role players. There have been some exceptions at 15 when teams sort of swing on somebody that they think is a project who can really pan out. But
I can think
by
of
and
one.
large, solid starter is a good outcome for 15. And so,
Agreed.
if you feel like you got a starter or a sixth man who's going to play 7 years in the NBA, if that's your number 15 pick, you probably did pretty well.
Yeah, I agree, and I think fans maybe don't look back enough at the draft. But like, even if you're picking like I don't know 8, 9, if you get a high-end backup like out of 8, 9, 10. That's still a good outcome. If a person who helps you win, holds down an important role, that's a good outcome, And now if you're going to the top three or four or whatever, I understand kind of having higher expectations. But if you have a guy who plays, 12 years, 13 years, whatever, and is like one of the, better, 15, bench players in the league at 8, 9, 10, that's a good outcome. So, it'll be interesting to see, with Bufkin kind of where he'll be in 3 or 4 years, but I think, kind of starting with him, the fact that I can see him playing with Trey and or DeJounte. I could see him playing on the ball or off the ball on offense. I think he'll need to become, ideally, he progresses as a shooter. But he showed some progression over the second half of this last college season that makes you, I think, feel like you can be a little hopeful that that might happen. But I think the big thing for me on offense is that, Quinn makes it clear, like when the ball rotates you, he wants you to shoot it, pass it, or drive it. Boom, go, right? And that's, to me, that's what Bufkin kind of has in his instincts. He talked about the fact that DeJounte kind of likes to sometimes let his defender get back in front of him and then read the defense after it resets when the ball swings to him. That's not what Quinn's looking for, right? And so
Right.
I feel like this kind of combo guard with the versatility, he seems happy to kind of, and I think he may have said this, I was you were I presume you heard from him tonight. I haven't caught up on all of that, but I'm happy to do this, I'm happy to do that, happy to help in this area, happy to help in that area. I'll do whatever is needed of me. That's the kind of player he's always struck me as. So on offense, I think he's the perfect fit. I think he can, if you want to get Trey off the ball for a little bit, I think maybe not in year one, but in year two, he can run the offense. Maybe latter half of year one, he can do a little bit of that too. Who knows? But I just think that's exactly the kind of guard you'd want to have to be a third guard with the two guards you have right now.
Right. And to be clear, when we talk about he could play with Trey, he can play with DeJounte, and you're sort of looking at the overall picture of his game, but he's 19. We're talking about what's going to happen in 2024, 2025. Like, that's not what happens this October. Landry Fields tonight acknowledged, like, when you're talking about, like, what's the one thing he's really got to work on? He's got to work on his body. Like, he's still a kid. He used the phrase he's growing. I didn't know if that was like a skill set thing or like a literal thing. But when you're 19, that's kind of open for debate. Like, you might still be physically growing. But he's got a big frame, but it just needs to fill out, and he has to learn the game. He has to work on his body. He has to work on his shot. But, what you see for a 19-year-old at the college levels is just not a lot of holes in his game, which is good. Like, he doesn't have a lot of wasted motion. Like, he plays kind of efficiently. And when you talk about a minute ago, like, that's kind of what Quinn wants is, some teams call it the 0.5. You get the ball, make a decision in 0.5 seconds. Are you going to drive? Are you going to shoot? You're going to pass? Like, make those quick decisions. And I think that's something that he can do well.
Yeah, and then on the other end, he showed a lot of defensive potential. He's pretty disruptive. He's pretty good at keeping the ball in front for a guy who's, I forgot exactly what he weighed in at the combine. I want to say 180 or so, right around there. But pretty physical and but good footwork, really really good active hands. If the guy he's defending kind of shows him the ball, he tries to get a hand on it and make something happen. But he does it with a little bit more kind of discipline than a lot of guys who are gambling for steals a lot. So I look at him and I think, okay, this could be a guy that, for really important stretches in games at some point, whether that's this season or year two, year three, or whatever, hard to know at this point, and too early to say. But who is defending the other team's point guard down, in the fourth quarter, whether that's Dame Lillard or, Darius Garland or whoever, it might be. But I think that we kind of look at this team and feel like too much to ask Trey. Trey doesn't have the skills and the tools to do that. DeJounte didn't show any kind of ability to do that apart from maybe, I don't know, five, six, seven games, where he kind of did okay-ish, with guys who didn't have like the fat quickest first step. He does okay on Luka, Luka's not beating you with the first step. So there are some, I think, matchups where DeJounte can do some. But I'd like to think that the idea is that if this kind of if he develops into kind of a pretty good outcome that you're hoping for, I think he's playing really important defensive minutes for this team across, the next few years.
One of the things that I particularly like, I don't know if this is a plus. I was just, you see the Hawks sort of picking a 6-4 combo guard, and I was just kind of pleased that, among some of the guards that were there, I think there were some other names that had, bigger holes in their games in terms of shooting or passing or be able to have sort of play on the ball and off. I like that they picked Kobe in that, he doesn't really have those holes. Does that seem like a fair assessment?
It does. I think when you kind of looked at who else was there, whether it was Smith, who, could be a great scorer one day. He landed with Charlotte, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. Jalen Hood-Schifino, who I love as a defender. I think he's gonna be a really, really good defender. I don't know if he puts together enough of an offensive game to kind of keep him on the floor for, sustained stretches. That's the question for me. I like that Bufkin. I could see Bufkin giving you good production on both ends of the court. And I think that's what kind of, sets him out a little bit. Some of the guys who went later, I think, like Smith, you have to kind of project, into them kind of really growing across 2 or 3 years. And you know me, I'm rooting for those guys to kind of do well. But the Hawks are at a point now where they're looking for a piece that's, maybe a little bit closer. And I mean, and Buffin's, young, but he's pretty developed. I know Landry talked about, as you mentioned, areas where he has to develop, but he has a pretty mature game for how old he is. And And the other part is that you look back at this last season at Michigan, and you hear people say when they stopped playing through Jet Howard, and who weirdly got drafted ahead of Buffkin, weird to me, and started playing through Buffkin, you'll hear people say that's when Michigan started getting better, right? And to me, that says something, you know. So also just his improvement from year one to year two, he had a pretty rough freshman season, you know, and you can look at that one of two ways. I guess you can go back and say, oh, did you know, his sample of good play is pretty small, or you could say he really improved a lot, you know. And but I, you know, I'm sure that you get intel on, you know, work ethic and all that sort of stuff. So I'm excited to see him on the team. I think he adds a lot. I think he's kind of, you know, when I've done sort of pods, whether here or with Brad talking about looking ahead, I thought like a third point guard that could defend was kind of the most important thing to find. And certainly you don't expect Buffkin to kind of give them everything like a Javon Carter would or whatever on day one, you know, but I think that he might get there faster than some people might think.
Yeah, and Buffkin was, you know, tonight was hard on himself, you know, in terms of, you know, what he did as a freshman. He said he couldn't guard anybody, and he said the biggest thing for him was moving his feet. And Landry said that, you know, in talking with him, one of the things that he talked about was, you know, in trying to figure out how to get better as a defender, he picked the best player on Michigan's team, watched a ton of video of that player, and just tried to emulate them to get better. And I guess all signs sort of point to the fact that he did progress and get better in his second season compared to his first.
Yeah, and you love that introspection. You love that self-accountability, right? I mean, even with the younger people that I coach that aren't heading for D1 schools, you know, in the professional level and stuff, but still, like, it's just easier to coach when there's an aspect of self-accountability and the self-recognition that these are things I can get better at, and to put, even kind of put a process together, a player putting a process together for themselves around these are the things I need to do, these are the steps that you take. I think that's awesome.
And he's a lefty. It seems like Quinn has had a few lefties in Utah. You know, does that change the geometry of the court? Like, can he get in some small actions with Trey where, you know, he's going to his strong side and Trey's going to his strong side, and you can kind of play some two-man game out of that? Like, is there anything different that changes when you play a lefty?
What I love is this, right? So if you have the double drag guard big, right, and Trey's going right, which is, you know, Trey can go in any direction, but he's, like most right-handed players, best going right. Buffkin going left as a left-handed shooter and kind of flaring in that direction. I love that. You know, and then if the ball finds him and his defender is trailing him, putting the ball on the floor and already kind of being on the side of the court that allows him to attack with that left hand, I think there's a lot of good stuff there. It's kind of funny. Your question makes you flash back to like Bud's Hawks teams, like, were so prescriptive. Like, even if you just watch the point guards warm up before the game, they would shoot basically all their threes, you know, 10 feet left of dead center from, you know, like, they'd be out there, right? And I was like, I don't think Bud could ever have a left-handed point guard. I think everything was, like, so precise. I think it's different with you know, with Quinn and things like that. But
it's funny, they're from the same tree. But I asked Bud about, you know, I don't know if it was even his team or his opponents. I think it was the Hawks had a few weird injuries, and all of a sudden they had a bunch of lefties. And I asked him about it. He blew me off, like, no, that doesn't change anything. What are you talking about?
All I know is that, like, every time I saw them kind of organized before the game, like, I could not picture a left-handed point guard, you know, kind of functioning that way. But maybe that's a me thing, not about Bigger. I mean, Bud just would never admit to it. But, you know, it's kind of funny because someone asked me about a comp on Twitter tonight, and I don't like, love comps. But I wonder if Quinn sees a little bit of Mike Conley in him. Right, Conley can play on or off the ball. Yep. Conley will do whatever you ask him to do. Conley's not the biggest guy, but he's tough and physical. And I mean, Conley's been a kind of a, you know, just outside kind of all-star range. You know, he's been and probably if the West weren't so crowded for a lot of the years he was with Memphis, he probably makes one or two or three all-stars. I mean, to me, he's been that good of a player, had that good of a career. And Colin was drafted in the top five, right? So a little different thing. So I'm not saying that I think Buffy's going to have that kind of career, but I just think kind of what Conley brings before the versatility, the team-mindedness, willing to kind of jump into whatever role is needed, complement whoever he's on the floor with. Bufkin kind of reminds me a little bit of a guy that kind of is in that same template.
I lost my train of thought. I had a question. Now, where did it go? Where did it go? Oh, I was going to say that. Well, maybe that wasn't it. I don't know. I was going to say at one point that it's been a while since the Hawks have had some lefties. I think the last couple were Kent Bazemore and Josh Magette. So you do have to go back to the Bud era to when they really had like their last like left-handed players. But it's interesting, and I did think about, you know, when I was thinking about Quinn, I had the same kind of thought about Mike Conley. And maybe, you know, maybe he can get some floater practice in with Trey and develop some Conley skills there so that he has something going to the rim for a guy his size. 'Cause it changes when you go to the NBA from college. You're not as big relative to your peers as you were in the NCAA.
And he has the kind of game that I think he's going to have to develop a body that can sustain contact because he's really good slashing and really good kind of attacking seams. And we've talked about the fact there's too many guys on the current Hawks roster that just can't get themselves in the mode of kind of seeking out that contact. I think that's going to be an important part of his game. He's going to like really max out production-wise and kind of adding as many skills as he can. I think that's going to be something for him to be able to do.
All right, so you've got our up close and personal scouting report on Muhammad Gay, who like it's not official, but you know, in just being around Hawks officials and staff tonight, I mean, while they said, you know, we can't officially talk about it in the presser, it wasn't like they acted like it wasn't a done deal either. So, you know, it
Seems
hasn't been
done.
reported all that widely. I think there was just the one Scotto tweet. There was still don't really know what the compensation was. I think Charlotte gave Boston a second round pick for that pick, but then they flipped it to the Hawks. And what did the Hawks give up? We don't know yet. So it'll be interesting to see over the coming days what that sort of compensation was. But you live in the
It's kind
Pacific
of,
Northwest and you've seen
I
this guy
do.
live.
I see. I can't. I was trying to remember. I've seen him play at least four times live. And he's a funny kind of guy. So the thing to kind of lead with is that he's a big that looks like he wants to be a wing, right? Now there are many examples of that. Jaren Jackson Jr. came to the league absolutely wanted to be like Kevin Durant, right? Face up, you know, attack my man like facing the basket. You know, getting the isolation, pull-ups, all that sort of stuff. And when you watch Gay play, that is clearly where he's most comfortable, which is strange because he's I think he measured in at the combine a little over 6'10", 212, like a 7'3" wingspan, I think. He's 20, so I'll turn 21, I think, in November. But like at Washington State, like they let him do a lot of that stuff. And like God bless Kyle Smith because it was ugly. A lot of it was really, really ugly. But like that, I think they were reps that still maybe served him well, like generally, in terms of like what the NBA is looking for bigs to do. So like, it's funny. I made a note here. He had, you know, 62 assists, 40 three-point attempts, 28 blocks, and so. And when you watch a play, you kind of see he thinks of himself as an offensive guy, right? And at that size, typically, especially a second round big, you're thinking this is a guy we hope we can develop into like a backup guy that can anchor our defense for 15 minutes a night or whatever, right? And he low post on offense, he has nothing, no feel, no footwork, no ability to kind of really dribble the ball into an advantageous kind of shot. His self creation, even when he's like 20 feet from the basket, is rough. But they let him do that quite a bit. But his shot looks functional. Like, I don't know how much feel there is, but it looks like mechanically, it looks workable. And so that's interesting to me. He runs the floor really well. He plays really hard. Now sometimes the playing hard doesn't go well because his footwork is terrible on defense, and close to the basket on offense, the footwork isn't there. But I mean, he's a guy that it looks like maybe he can develop an ability to kind of get the ball in a short roll, dribble the ball once, maybe twice, and read the floor and kick it out. But he has good hands. Yeah, I mean, you see it as a shooter, you see it as a finisher. When he's not kind of banging down close, close to the rim, you see it like in the open floor. He catches the ball very reliably, works hard as a rim runner. There were times when he would catch the ball kind of a step above the free throw line, and the defender's way off of him, and he just takes one dribble, goes right past him, and dunks it. And, so he has kind of these one dribble moves.
Yep.
Single dribble or crossover, single crossover dribble into a step back. He's not going to get to do that in the NBA. Sorry, I hate to tell you that, Muhammad, but you're not going to get to do that. But the pick and pop, like, could develop. The short roll could develop. He has the hands and he has the fluid athleticism where that could be something I see kind of coming along. And my guess is that's kind of what they're looking for. On the defensive end, right now, I can only really see him. And I don't want to limit him, but right now I can only really see him as a weak side rim protector, a helper, interior helper kind of coming from the weak side. The one we always think of is Boston with Robert Williams, the third kind of in that role. But, he's 20. That's not to say they can't teach him how to bang. That's not to say they can't challenge him to go embrace the physical aspects of the game. I think from watching him live, for me, I'm sure he's not naturally inclined to want to go do that like like a whole game. He'd rather be on the perimeter using his, good hands and his fluid athleticism and, dribbling past people and running past people, sprinting past people, all that sort of stuff. His passes, like when he would, I mean, 62 assists is a lot, for a 20-year-old center
Right.
in college. Designed play passes, like where he gets the ball in a certain spot. A lot of the ATOs, the Hawks run that elbow series where they'll give the ball to, to Onyeka, like right near the elbow, and they'll run a cutter on the backside or and a guy lifting to the 3-point line. Like I could see Gay functioning that kind of stuff a lot. Now, can he develop in a year or two, putting the ball on the floor and making a pass kind of live dribble creation? That's not there at all right now. But I think as you think about kind of a good baseline set of skills for where he's drafted, and he's interesting as a guy who I think could be a bit of a connective passer, a guy who could maybe function in the short role. I think he absolutely could develop into a corner 3-point shooter. Question is can you get him to embrace being the interior defender, the defensive anchor you need him to be at his size? Or is he going to be a 6'10" power forward spacing? That's not like unheard of, but I think you'd hope that he'd be able to give you something as a defensive anchor too. That's not there at all right now.
So, sort of, before we advance, I just want to say like that you got to give him like the full like dribble handoff package. I want you mentioned those sort of one dribble line drives to the rim, like, and being, have some facility for passing, because he's only played organized basketball for 4 years. So like to have some touch passing and even be able to, execute some passes and on very set plays, like that's still a reasonable skill. So, that's pleasing to see. But when you go back to the defense, two questions. One, like if he's guarding a big in a pick and roll, like what do you see for him in terms of, can he play drop? Can he play up? Like, for in terms of different styles, do you think he'll have some versatility? And two, if he only had 20 blocks with a 7'3" wingspan, at the college level, like, is there something that Washington State was doing defensively that kept him out of the paint where he wasn't able to get blocks, or was it just lack of strength, lack of, recognizing the rotations to get to these? Like, why was the shot blocking not there?
They did like sort of like on offense, they did let him get up the floor on defense. Switch, get the level of the screen, rotate to a shooter, not just stay down in the paint. So they got him out, right? it's kind of funny because when you were asking this question, I was like, man, when he sits down and has his presser and someone asks him, the question is always asked, who do you think of, like, who do you pattern your name after? I would put a decent amount of money, he's going to say Pascal Siakam. But that's going to be kind of the guy, you could see it in the way he kind of approaches the game. You can absolutely, see it. But on defense, like, he shows, like, the athleticism to get out there. And, like, he'll, the mental recognition will be slow. As you pointed out, he's only been playing for a few years, right? So I don't really hold that against him. I think that's an experience and matter of kind of repetitions. But once he recognized, oh, that's my rotation, he would kind of get in gear. It'd be too late oftentimes, but that's what he'd do. And he looks like he can switch guard and space quite well, except his footwork is just terrible. So he takes the wrong angle, he guards the wrong hip, he, doesn't kind of account for what technique the ball handler is kind of using again. He's just inexperienced, And so, but if you ask him right now, it's like, I think he'd tell you, I'm better out there than I am on the inside. I'm sure that's what he would say. And once you watch him play, you can see that's what he wants to do as a defender too. He wants to get out and guard the ball. Is that what the Hawks envision for him? Are they going to give him a chance to kind of play some at the four? Or are they going to say, no, we're going to develop you as a five? So just, I mean, so on defense, I think he has the athleticism and fluidity and lateral ability to kind of do all that stuff, pretty well for a center. And maybe kind of well for a power forward, but like it's the footwork, it's the technique. The technique is terrible. And again, I think that I'm not killing the guy. That's just a matter of experience for me. But he's really fun to watch running the floor, sprinting the floor. He plays hard all the time. His techniques are just behind where you'd want them to be at this point. Because like you said, he's only played 4 years.
It's one of those times where it's helpful not to have your G League team up in Erie, Pennsylvania. Like having
For
College
sure.
Park close by will be nice because he'll, he could be at Hawks practices, he could be at Skyhawks practices and Skyhawks games, and just get lots and lots and lots of reps because that's what he's gonna need.
Yeah. I think he'll be, if the trade is official in time for him to play, I think he'll be a fun, like, summer league guy. He'll fly up and down the floor, and he'll have some ugly moments too, related to things we've already gone through. But I think he'll be kind of a guy that gives you some fun moments too.
And if he patterned himself after Siakam, and if that's somebody he looks up to, it's that's probably an easy sell because that's what Siakam did. I mean, he helped Raptors 905 win a G League championship,
Yep.
in that season where he played a lot in the G League, and that was the bridge to get him ready for the NBA. So no shame in that.
Absolutely.
All right, number 46, take it away.
Seth Lundy, he may have turned 24 in between the draft ending and that. No, I'm kidding. He's 23. He'll turn 24 before the season ends. The Hawks will have like 3 games left on the regular season. He'll turn 24. So he's an older guy, but
2 years in a row
six-four.
for the Hawks, right? Did that they had the oldest player last year and the oldest player this year, I think.
Yeah. Oh, is he the oldest? I hadn't caught up.
I think he,
Yeah.
well, I guess I didn't check the last few picks, but I think he was definitely the oldest at the time he was picked, and maybe there was somebody
Yeah.
late, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it seems likely that it would make that very well could be him. But I mean, I was joking about like making this pick to appease Kyle, but man, he just absolutely shoots the daylights out of the ball. 6'4", 214 at the combine, 6'10¼ wingspan, so that's nice. 14.2 points he shot at 40% from the 3-point line this year on a really nice volume. 31 assists, 31 turnovers. It makes me laugh that Gay has exactly twice as many assists as Lundy did. Gay got a lot of opportunity, but basically, Lundy is a floor spacer, gonna spot up. That's basically what he's gonna do, is spot up. He has, as some guys who are like 6'4", but have the 6'10 wingspan, the getting the arms all the way through the shot is takes just a tick longer. I don't want to call it slow at all. It's efficient, repeatable. all that stuff. But it's like, you ever like kind of watch Kent Bazemore, who was like, he was like 6'3" and had like, what, a 6'11" wingspan or something crazy like that.
Yeah, I think,
And
yeah.
that's a lot of arms to get through your shooting motion, right? And so I think those guys have to work really hard to like manage out any wasted kind of motion, you know. And so his is a little, the wind up is a little much maybe, but you probably don't touch it because he's so good. It's like, okay, let's just catch and be ready when you catch the ball, and kind of go. I don't know if you mess with it, but he has a nice high release point. It's
Yeah, I
an
was gonna
actual jump
say,
shot, not a,
you kind of make up for it with a high release though, right? If you're a
yep,
little bit
for
slower,
sure.
but you got the long arms and you get it up high, that helps.
Yeah, and it helps that it's a jump shot, not a set shot, right? So that gets you the extra kind of release point of, elevation as well. And in terms of like dealing with the closeout, I saw a lot of single dribble relocation. I don't know if that I saw kind of combination, in right back, that may be there. It just may be that at Penn State, they just kept it very simple for him. So that's something to keep an eye on, is how sophisticated is his kind of dribble package and dribble relocation. I think that'll be a very important aspect when he has to attack a closeout, kind of going by driving a pretty rough finish at the rim, but pretty good kind of getting down to 8 feet. He'll step back. And so you'll see more of him being comfortable kind of trying to drive his defender kind of away from him, creating some space and getting to that 8 or 10 foot kind of pull up more than getting to the rim, because he just doesn't have a ton of elevation there. On defense, he's gonna have to be a technique defender, a good team defender, a good effort defender. He's not terrible, kind of with his ability to move left and right, but he's below average, I think, for what position you would think of him playing in the NBA. But not terrible. But again, that's where being proactive, being on time, being connected, all that sort of stuff kind of really kind of makes up for it. So, pretty tough defender, works really hard, plays hard. Decent rebounder for a guy his size as well, works hard kind of down there helping the team rebound as well. So for 46, I think, getting a guy who can shoot the basketball and a guy who is probably not that far off being able to kind of handle some kind of basic, minutes of responsibility, some simplified role minutes. I think it's good. I think he's an interesting fit. But he's a guy, like, he can shoot it and he has enough size that if like 5 years from now, you're like, oh, this guy plays for whatever team he's on, 11 minutes a game, or whatever. He's a guy that wouldn't shock you if kind of the outcome is that he kind of sticks as a ninth, 10th, 11th guy on a team that just needs shooting at that level of the depth on their rotation. I think he could become that kind of guy.
What is your takeaway from the Hawks? Aside from doing whatever they did to acquire the number 39 pick, there was, no real action tonight in terms of, making a trade with players on the roster or doing something to, maybe move closer to being below the tax threshold. Like no moves tonight. Does that surprise you? Does it change anything going forward? Like, what do you take away from that?
Well, I mean, for me, it's sort of like when we had the conversation at the trade deadline. I thought like 80% of the evaluated trade deadline was that they didn't make a bad trade. And there was a new front office. This was their first. That was the first kind of gut check with the new leadership around the decision making there. Here, I think a big deal. Didn't make a bad trade. Didn't get on the clock and rush through a decision and make a deal that wasn't good for you. I still think all the noise around this is that they realize that they've got to move some salary. Sooner than later, probably. But I would appreciate, as a fan, I would appreciate them not rushing that process unnecessarily and taking their time with that. And so, there's, for example, you hear, if you kind of go look around, you hear like Oakland to Houston. There's some chatter around that. But you also hear Houston's going to take a look at Brook Lopez as a free agent. And it's like, why would you go try to sell a trade to Houston that is so good for them, that makes them say, okay, we're not even going to see if we can get Brook Lopez. We're going to do this deal. That's probably not a deal that's good for the Hawks, right? So for the Hawks to not go out and force something is like 80% of my how I evaluate it. You know, I still think a move is likely coming, whether it's, you know, with a moratorium lift or whenever, you know, we'll see. But you know, I'm just glad that they are deliberate about that. They were at the trade deadline. They seem to be tonight. I think that's a good approach. I still expect something to happen, whether it's JC or Clint or Hunter or whatever. I think it's more likely to be either JC or Clint, is my guess. But I appreciate them not just rushing into something just to kind of get it taken care of. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, use it all up. I don't have anything to add to that, Glenn.
Sorry, Kevin.
No, that sounds right to me. That sounds right.
Yeah. You have a one big team that like really, really did well tonight in your view, or do you need to process this?
You know, I've very much been Hawks focused. I haven't really thought too much about it.
Yeah. I thought Dallas did good work.
Yeah, I can see
I
that.
was surprised they used that trade exception on Rashawn Holmes right away, but I thought Dallas kind of added in the right areas, and then there were so many trades that I'm probably with you. Like I need to let all the trades land in my head before I can really think broadly about who did well.
All right. Well, I appreciate
Right.
you going deep into the night to get this done so that we got the draft covered on the first day after the draft.
Absolutely.
All right. Good night, Bob.
Bye, Bob.